These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Well, good morning. Good Saturday morning, Judd Zolgad. Wow.
Good to be here. Good to be here. So I think the open has to be changed now eventually, right? These guys either survived Glenn Taylor or maybe A-Rod and Laurie. Like, it's just become more... David Kahn is now sort of a pimple on the butt of the Wolves compared to what's transpired.
What's happening now?
Yeah.
I know. It's
incredible.
And I know that you've been on Twitter and other places just trying to figure out, where does this rank in terms of ownership battles? And the Vikings had a long run of crazy ownership situations before the Wolves saved them.
At some point, like a top five outside of this. Oh, God, yeah. Well, the group of 10, people forget, you know, Carl Pollett, I think at one point, thought he was going to buy the Vikings and sued the group of 10 because a group of 10 owned the team at one point. So 10 people. And then that's where Denny Green wrote his book and basically threatened in like the last chapter to sue them and said, I will take the team over. So there's some great stuff.
Well, let's start the episode by just saying, hey, Timberwolves back in first place. Get the flag in the Western Conference. There goes my button bar crapping out here too, just like the Wolves owners.
I was going to say, just like the ownership groups.
Dude, I had a chance. I went to Falling Knife last night, and it's just an absolute madhouse of a Wolves fan vibe there. And it was a freaking blast watching them absolutely destroy the Denver Nuggets. And I know that Nuggets fans are going to be like, well, Jamal Murray was out. Well, Karl Anthony Towns has been out your second best player's out. Timberwolves' second best player's out, or maybe third best player, because I think Rudy Gobert is playing at a ridiculous level. Mm-hmm. And the Wolves jump out to a 20-point lead in the first half. They hang on in the fourth quarter. My God. I mean, Rudy Gobert, 21 points on 7 shots. A little rough at the free throw line, but the defense he was playing all night to hold the Nuggets under 100 points.
The defense was incredible. I think the defense, actually, of all the takeaways from what was pretty much a domination. Like, I don't think that's going too far to say they dominated Denver, which is impressive because it's on the road as well. But I think the most impressive thing was the defensive effort. The defensive effort. And I also, so here's a dime store theory for you. I actually think all this crap surrounding the team is going to help the players and the team. And like, I loved the Chris Finch pregame quote. That's way above my pay grade. Yeah. We're just going to continue to focus. Like, what better way to tell your team to focus than to have an example of, look at what's going on with these guys. And to the millionaires that play basketball, these guys are billionaires, right? I think in some ways this could be a very nice short-term few-month rallying point.
Well, that's what I was curious to see last night is, you know, they were... Now, all of a sudden, these players at shoot-arounds and post-game, at least for the weekend, and once they come back home, they'll be asked about it too, I'm sure. They're going to get asked. They were just thrown into a situation now going into the playoffs that they didn't ask for. And by the way, we will get into bravo to Dane Moore and our guy Kyle Tighe for landing A-Rod and Laurie. Now, they wound up doing a media tour, but those guys landed A-Rod. They were the first out of the gate, 35 minutes, gloves completely off.
Great stuff.
And if you haven't already, I would even recommend, if you haven't consumed that podcast, pause this one. Go listen to that for 35 minutes on Dane Moore's YouTube channel and podcast feed, and then come back because we're going to react to everything that was said in that podcast. But I was kind of curious, like, God, these poor players now, they're just trying to go about their business and fight for the one seed and get to the playoffs. And Mike Conley kind of said it too. Mike Conley came out during shoot around and said, well, yeah, I mean, we definitely see it and it's definitely a bizarre situation, but then we take a deep breath and go study film and go watch Jokic and try and win. And to come out that way. The other thing too is the different ways this team has to win games when they're not playing at their best. So again, they're down Karl Anthony Towns for weeks here. What are they now? Like, are they 9-3 without Kat or something like that? If I would have told you last night, okay, ownership chaos, a nuclear bomb drops on the organization, and they have to go into Denver with first place on the line, and Denver is going to be highly engaged for this game. Mm-hmm. And Judd, Naz Reid is going to go 2-for-12 from the field. Anthony Edwards is going to go 0 for 8 from 3. In fact, Naz Reid and Anthony Edwards are going to go 0 for 13 from 3-point range in this game.
Yep.
With all of that, what happens in this game? Where on your bingo card would 13-point win that was a 25-point lead going into the fourth quarter, where would that have ranked? I mean, it legitimately...
100th?
A very long list of impressive wins this season. This probably is the new biggest and best win of the season for the Wolves.
And I think the thing that stood out to me among the performances was Mike Conley, who's been, you know, he's been a great presence all season long, but he's definitely been up and down at times as far as, and I think you could debate that he's also a point guard who's smart enough to know if Ant is hot, he's going to get Ant the ball. Yep. So like, this is not a slam on Conley, but 8 of 12 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, including at least 3 early threes that sort of set the tone. Eight assists, 23 points. The other guy who's, I think, sneakily coming along at a pretty good time, and I think it's a definite fallout of Cat not being there, is Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a second.
17 points last night, 7 of 10 from the field. But, you know, this is, so I think this is, this current, what we've seen of late, Phil, I think this is what the franchise saw, like, as what Jaden would do. I don't think anyone thought, oh, Jaden McDaniels has a big contract coming up, so he's going to take over games. But like, this these performances, I think, are, if you can get these in the playoffs or something close, I think you're thrilled.
If you can get this Jaden McDaniels and then obviously this Gobert and Anthony Edwards, etc., like, they can go to the finals. They have a kryptonite nature about the matchup with the Denver Nuggets that should scare the Nuggets. If I'm ranking the you're teams right. that I think you should be afraid of if you're the Timberwolves, I mean, you should have a healthy respect for almost every team that's going to be in the bracket, because you could make a case, a very strong case, for a lot of different teams in the West. Boy, if you get the best version of the Mavericks, the best version of the Suns, best version of the Lakers or whatever, like, there's a lot of teams that could do damage, but... There's just something about the size of the Timberwolves, the versatility of the different defensive matchups, that if I'm Denver, I hope that it's a 1 and 2 seed situation for Wolves Denver, and that they are as far apart in the bracket. If I'm the Wolves, I wouldn't mind seeing Denver in like the second round at this rate. But on Jaden McDaniels, one thing that was interesting last night, because Jamal Murray didn't play, and oftentimes when Jamal Murray is playing, they'll put Jaden McDaniels for his length and size to try and pester Jamal Murray for portions of the game. Well, he was out. So what they did was they put Jaden McDaniels on Michael Porter Jr. for a large chunk. And if you remember the game where the Wolves were without Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid and Karl Anthony Towns last week or a week and a half ago at Target Center, Michael Porter Jr. went off for 26 points. He was 9 of 15 from the field. He knocked down a bunch of three-pointers. And if he didn't put up that performance, it was one of his best games of the season. The Nuggets lose that game at Target Center. So they said, okay, let's see how Michael Porter Jr. does with Jaden McDaniels chasing him around all night. Mm-hmm. He only got 10 shot attempts off in 36 minutes, because it's hard to get open looks when Jaden McDaniels is guarding you off ball. So you can deploy Jaden McDaniels on ball, off ball, yes, against guards, against forwards, and it's a joy to watch. And you're right. If you're going to get 17 points efficiently and a lockdown defensive performance, they didn't have that chess piece last year because he punched a wall and missed the entire playoff series, right?
And that is like, that screams blueprint for playoff success. Like, those type of performances in the playoffs in springtime, like, those are absolutely huge. I got a question for you now that's, it's not really a favorable one. It's a good problem to have, I guess, but what do you think this looks like now when Cat comes back? So, like, as far as all these pieces we're talking about, it feels like a lot of people with Cat out have sort of fit into a role. And, you know, the last game, the Golden State game, that I did a show with you after, we were singing Nas's praise because Nas was spacing well, and Nas has done a lot of good. What do you think this whole thing looks like? You know, plop Cat back in. Let's say it's playoff game one or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, now he's back. What's your thought process there?
I wish I had a strong take on this, because I don't. I think, I guess I trust Chris Finch enough. Chris Finch has done such a good job with different injuries and and different, you know, last year the roster wasn't gelling as well when you tried to put Gobert and Kat together, Gobert and Nas, and like, and so he's done such a good job getting pieces to gel that I think my answer is I just trust Chris Finch to figure it out. I don't think you can say, even though they've been playing incredibly well without Kat, I don't think you can say that they are better without him, period. I think you can say that they don't miss a beat when Naz Reid is inserted in for 33 minutes instead of 23. Naz Reid fits perfectly. And we went through some of the lineup combinations on, I think it was Tuesday's episode of Flagrant Hollis, or maybe Thursday. Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid and Anthony Edwards are the best pairings of any two-man pairings on this team. So like inserting Naz Reid, you don't lose anything. It's the depth that you lose out on and the extra shooting and the extra offense. So I'm as curious as you are, man. Like, how do you bring a unicorn back into the mix here, especially if things are going really well? And like, what's the timeline? The playoffs start in a couple of weeks, like 2.5 weeks.
Right. That's the thing, is it's going to happen then. Like that's the thing. You're not going to have, it doesn't feel like you're going to have a ramp up week.
Yeah.
And I guess my question comes from a place of the one thing I think we've seen without Towns is a lot of people have found roles that they look really good in and are probably comfortable with. And so it's not just from what's your combinations. It's how do guys now go back to previous roles? Like, do you play Nas, Kat, and Gobert together more? I know Finch talked about that, but like that's the thing. It's the tactician question to me of like, how do you make this work now? Because it's worked well, and then to what you just said, you're literally going to have to do this as your playoffs start.
Yep, and I think what I would keep in mind, too, is before the Cat injury, the Wolves were in first place or a half game out in the West. They were the best team in the Western Conference with Cat and Nas playing fewer minutes and coming off the bench.
Yep.
So I would be really nervous if, like, boy, they were, like, sixth in the West and kind of toiling, and then he leaves, and now they've skyrocketed up the board. And how you – there's at least a proven formula for oh, it works really well, and you're just going to have to reduce some of the Kyle Anderson minutes, and Nas is not going to play 33 minutes. But yeah, do they play those three guys together more often? Adding a guy as big as Kat against a Denver Nuggets team that feasts on teams because of their size can only help you, I think. But at the same time, can you get the composed Karl Anthony Towns that we saw for most of the season, right? Like we saw a much more, I feel like, stoic, composed version of him. Can he carry that over into the playoffs?
And what's his role initially, right? Because I mean, there's going to be rust there, and a meniscus is not a small thing. Like a meniscus can take some time. So I guess the question is, if this team is going to dare I say, get to the Western Conference Finals, I'm willing to bet his role will be far bigger in series two and then into three than it will opening night of the playoffs round one.
Yep, and we're just
it's a great problem to have. Don't get me wrong.
We're not close enough timeline wise. Yeah, they have. I mean, God, they've won four in a row here. So I think he went out Portland game. So the Indiana game was the first game without Kat. So they are 1, 2, 3, 4. They're 8-3 without Karl Anthony Towns. And by the way, they were playing at like an 8-3-ish, 8-4-ish pace with Karl Anthony Towns. So they're just good. Period. Because it's an awesome roster. And their schedule upcoming here is interesting. So they get a 3-game homestand here. The Bulls on Sunday. The surging Rockets, the hottest team in the NBA. They won again last night. They've gone from being like 10 games below 500 to now being like 2 or 3 games above 500.
They've had a nice year.
Toronto, it's a back-to-back Tuesday, Wednesday. Toronto at home. You've got some tough road games coming up, though. The 5th of April, 7th, you got at Phoenix, at the Lakers, fighting for their play-in positioning. And then you have another game at Denver on April 10th. But you also mix in games against Washington at home, Atlanta at home. So the one seed is very much gettable, especially if you're going to beat Denver in these games. You got to keep an eye on Oklahoma City, of course.
Yep. And the really nice thing about this team is they do take care of business against the teams that they should beat. There's not a lot of, you know, the schedule last season was pockmarked, right? With how'd you lose to Detroit? Oh, you lost to that team again?
Yeah.
Like, the nice thing is, and to your point, you're right. This team is just good. They have some bad nights, yes, but they have way more good nights than bad nights. And like last night was not some type of fluke. Like, you didn't watch that game. That's what I keep coming back to with how good this roster is. You don't watch them and think, oh, this is a lot of fun, but they're not going to repeat this. These guys are legitimately one of the better teams in this town I've seen in a long time as far as being a complete roster.
They can win the championship. This team can win the NBA championship. I'm not saying they're the favorites. I still think the Celtics are probably the favorites. And the Nuggets, once again, you're going to get into a 7-game series. They have done it. They have navigated it, and they've won the championship. But the Timberwolves can absolutely win the championship this year.
The Timberwolves are legitimately, as the standings show, a top Western Conference team. The issue is the Western Conference just has some really damn good teams, too.
It is. You mentioned, just real quick, beating the teams you're supposed to. And last night was a game where you beat a team that maybe you weren't supposed to on the road with all this chaos around. So last year, the Wolves, they lost 18 games to teams below 500. This year, they've only lost 5 games to teams below 500.
Yep.
The Nuggets, incredibly, are 24-1 against below 500 teams. So that team always takes care of business. Mm-hmm. But here's the most impressive thing. The Wolves have the best record in the Western Conference against above 500 teams. So against the teams that you might not, you're not supposed to beat always. They are 30-17. The Nuggets are 27-22. The Nuggets are actually feasting more on bad teams and playing a little bit above 500 against the best teams in the NBA. And the Wolves are 30-17 against the above 500 teams. The Clippers are 24-23 against above 500 teams. The Pelicans are 25-21. The Thunder are 29-17, just a half game below the Wolves. But that's a sign, man. Like, you're beating the teams that you're supposed to. Oh, and you're beating the teams that are above 500 at a better rate than anyone else in the conference.
And the thing that I do like about the Wolves going into the playoffs, to go back to how they played against Denver last night, is the defense. Like, I think if defense consistently shows up, that gives you the best chance. Because the shooting can come and go at times. You know, there's a level of inconsistency at times to offense that I think is not avoidable. But if you're always playing defense, you give yourself far more of a chance. And I think when you get into the playoffs, that becomes the most important thing, is do you give yourself a chance? Because ultimately, you're probably going to be playing against teams that are as good as you. I don't know there's a Western Conference team I consider to be better than the Wolves or like clearly above them. Mm-hmm. But I do consider the best teams in the conference to be equals. And so if you're hounding like they did last night, Ant can have a decent game, not a great game, and you can definitely win.
Yeah. I mean, God, they just held the Nuggets to 98 points in Denver. Altitude, everything. It's ridiculous. So that Rudy Gobert block on Jokic in the first half, inject that into all of our veins.
He was so pissed at the refs.
Well, yeah, like that, first of all.
That was a bad tech.
An elbow, he put a little sauce on the flop. Like, it was a little bit of a flop.
But he was showing the contraption he's got for his rib. He's got a whole contraption on.
He got elbowed. Yes. Do I think that elbow sent him flying? Probably not. But, dude, he literally has a flak jacket protecting his rib cage right now. You can't call that.
He's in pain, too. Like, I'll say this. He might have flopped, but I buy what he was saying, which is my... Jim Pete did mention this, and I don't know if this was a couple of games ago. Jim Pete offhanded mentions that it was broken, but I'm not positive that he's sure of that or was just trying to say, when I played, I broke my rib. But I mean, I think there's no question Gobert gets points here for playing through something that would probably confine the two of us, for instance, to a bed.
And plays at the highest level. I mean, he's still playing, even banged up, like the defensive player of the year, which he will win in a few weeks. So, all right. You want to get to the...
Yeah, let's get to the
ownership stuff
here.
Let's
go from this team could win an NBA title to this team is one of the most dysfunctional teams. Fortunately, it has nothing to do with the on-the-court product.
So, all right. A-Rod and Laurie have punched back, let's just say.
Yep.
The Sportico article came out first, and then about 45 minutes later, Dane and Kyle, the Dane Moore NBA podcast, which Dane used to contribute at Score North. He's been a friend. He is excellent at what he does. You should absolutely go subscribe to his YouTube channel and his podcast. And Kyle Tige, who is part of our Flagrant Howell stable, also part of Dane Moore NBA podcast. And so Dane and Kyle wrangle up Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie for 35 minutes of gloves off, absolute savaging of Glenn Taylor. And to Dane and Kyle's credit, they were there to just ask the important questions. And they asked all of the important questions. Do you have the money? Why is this a perception over here, right? Also, credit to our guy Doogie, man. Like, Doogie got Glenn Taylor. I think Doogie's the only one that's gotten, Glenn and Mark and Alex also went on, they talked to The Athletic and Star Tribune. But Doogie got Glenn on the record a few days ago. And then he gets A-Rod and Laurie as well on the KSTP website. So these guys went on a media tour. I'm just going to give you, this is mostly from the Dane and Kyle podcast, because credit to those guys. I'm just going to give you some bullet point summary points from what those guys came out saying, and then we can react. And I spent like 2 hours yesterday talking to people very plugged in to this entire situation that I'd like to relay some of that reporting to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the main summary is that A-Rod and Laurie are not backing down. In fact, quite the opposite. They have one of the premier law firms in the entire country. The gloves are completely off. They have decided we are going to cut as deep as we possibly can. We wanted this to be handled privately. The kids didn't need to see the parents fighting. But since Grandpa Taylor came out and decided to make it a public mess, then you know what? We can play that game too. And so to me, listening to those guys talk for 35 minutes, it really feels like Mark and Alex want to end Glenn Taylor. And Alex even said, quote, "We will protect the Wolves fan base from Glenn Taylor."
Yes. Yes. It's incredible.
Laurie said, "We are shocked he would do this to the fans, to the city, to the players, right in the middle of this epic stretch run. Really disappointed. We think it's selfish and disingenuous." Laurie referred to Glenn Taylor as not a person of high integrity. A-Rod said he was told by multiple people early in the deal process, like 2 or 3 years ago, "Hey, make sure you have good lawyers and don't trust Glenn." I wonder if KG was one of the people that.
Oh, God, yeah. That I immediately thought that. That's 21 for sure right there.
A-Rod also said Glenn Taylor did not want the Rudy Gobert trade, that he was against the Rudy Gobert trade, but said, "All right, whatever, I won't stand in the way of you guys." That's a great deep cut right there.
Yep.
A-Rod added that Glenn laughed at the notion of pursuing Tim Connelly, and this is A-Rod quoting Glenn Taylor. Yep. "Why are you wasting your time on Tim Connelly? People like him don't come here."
Oh.
Which, again, we're getting like this is from, you know, how much do you trust?
Right.
By the way, and we'll get to our thoughts on this.
Right, right.
But if A-Rod is direct quoting Glenn Taylor, that is the core of why there's a million reasons why I can't stand Glenn Taylor as an owner.
Yeah.
But this bumpkin, small time, rinky dink, we're just a small town operation. And these guys come in and say, screw that. They called Pat Riley, dude. They called Pat Riley, got turned. They said, "We're going to make Pat Riley turn us down. And then we're going to go to Tim Connelly after that."
Yeah. And you know what? In their case, that's exactly what you should do. You are all a member of the National Basketball Association.
Right.
Like Glenn, you're not running a minor league team here. Like you are in the NBA. So of all the stuff that you're going through right now, I am inclined to, I could totally see Glenn saying that. Like that's one where, because I do think a lot of it is just spin, like, hey, be on our side. But that one I could totally see. And the Gobert trade thing I could totally see. And a year ago, people would have sided with Glenn.
Yeah, dude, Glenn is the most small-time multi-billionaire in the history of the United States. And we've seen it for 25 years.
People like Glenn owned professional teams in the 60s, in the 70s, the 80s.
We look each other in the eye over my wife's lasagna, yeah, and we do handshake deals. Like,
yeah,
dude,
exactly.
So a few more things from this, just high-level stuff here, summary points. Lori said someone from Glenn's camp. Let me back up a second. So obviously Glenn gave the keys to Lori and A-Rod, said, you're not majority owners yet, but you will be, so you can drive the car before it's yours. And they went out, they hired a general manager, they hired some other people within the organization, they started sprucing up. They took part of like the media room and turned it into like a private kind of.
They took the whole thing.
It's like a green room basically now, yeah, for, you know, entertaining.
It evidently has marble now and nice bathrooms. It had a urinal and a toilet before that, and that was basically it. So evidently this room is really nice. I'd love to see it again.
That's great. And that's fine because there's still plenty of room for me. You got the media row out, yeah, in the arena. You got another, there's a, yeah, press conference room. There's plenty of room for idiots like us. So they've been, whether it's like hiring people or whether it's some minor construction projects in the bowels of Target Center, they've kind of said, cool, yeah, we're going to spruce up this car. Lori said someone from Glenn's camp approached them a while back and said, hey, you guys need to back off a little bit. Glenn feels like you're doing a little too much. Let Glenn step to the front of the stage for his final months as owner and enjoy this.
I have so many questions off of this too.
Also, I'll go through a couple more and then we can.
Yeah.
So A-Rod and Lori have been frozen. They said they've been frozen out of the organization the last 2 days, which there was an internal memo sent out by Glenn Taylor that said no email communication with these guys. We don't want them talking to high-level executives or players.
Right.
And by the way, we don't want them traveling to Denver for this game on Friday night. I can tell you, I have confirmed with a couple people within the Wolves organization that that is indeed true, that they are not supposed to talk to Glenn and Mark and Alex right now.
So just to be clear, they can attend game. Glenn hasn't frozen them out of the arena. What he's done is said you can't be in that suite that you built. You can't like have the run of the arena, but you can go to like he's not trying to ban them from games, correct?
Maybe we can double triple check this, but it was strongly insinuated that they do not go to the Denver game last night.
Well, how about here on Sunday, for instance?
I don't know that you can ban.
I don't think you
someone
can ban
from buying a ticket and going to a game. I mean, I'm sure they have like comp tickets as part of their ownership, right, package, but
yeah, courtside.
Could they just buy a ticket if, let's say, Glenn pulled those tickets? I don't even know if he.
I'd like to know this though. That's actually a good question because, like, is A-Rod going to be up in the 200s now?
But they don't want A-Rod even right now, as I have understood it. They don't want Alex. Alex is the one that's going to the most games. Mark is in New York mostly. Mark was very much part of the media tour yesterday, but like, I don't think Glenn wants Alex dapping up Anthony Edwards during, you know, pregame shoot around.
Right.
Or sitting there. And dude, Alex will, for oftentimes for large chunks of the second half, Alex will go stand in the tunnel and, you know, players will come out at halftime.
Yep.
So Lori added, it was Glenn's idea to do the 2.5 year structured payout with the different checkpoints. We were willing to do it all up front, Lori said. And then A-Rod stressed the importance of keeping the team in Minnesota. Hey, I bought a house here. I love it here, right?
That did very little for me.
Well, A-Rod, okay. I thought A-Rod was doing pretty well. And then he said, I played at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
The old Yankee Stadium. And the new one, right? He played at both or just the new one? I don't remember. Well, he played at both. As a visiting player, he played at. He goes, and Target Center is the best sports atmosphere I've ever been part of. Which, hey, that makes us feel good.
Yeah,
but I don't know if I go quite that.
Look, I put all of this stuff up to the prism of Norm Green, who moved his team. So like I put all of this, like, there are interesting nuggets to take out, and just to echo what you said, you know, Dane and Kyle did a fantastic job, but they can only ask the questions.
Well, and I guess you have to figure out what percentage of that 35 minutes and then everything they said with Doogie and everything they said to the newspapers and Athletic. What percentage of it is true? Because if, by the way, if it's a, if what they're saying up and down is 100% true,
yep,
Glenn Taylor, take a hike. But is it 60% true? Well, is it 70%? That's what we have to figure out in the coming weeks. What lawyers have to figure out.
Here's the question I'd like to ask them, though. Okay, so there are three incremental steps to the purchase as agreed to. There was the first check, which gave them, I think, a 20% share. There was the second check, which I think was supposed to be 20%, but ended up being 16%, if I'm correct. But anyway, long story short, those were for, as they talked about, those were for LPs. They were limited partners still. Yeah. So those both got approved. There's a very different step in step three, which is the step that they are trying to force through right now of 40%, because now you are the majority owner of the team. So here's my question for them and the lawyers. This can all be agreed to. Like, that's fine. And the two sides can say, yes, we had an agreement. And Glenn can even say, I tried to yank that back. But my question is this. How are they going to handle the league? Because if the league says, you know what, you guys, sorry, the 40%, it's not good. Sorry, we can't do that. Then Glenn can almost get out of the way completely, because it's the league. The league has to approve.
The league would play bad cop in that situation.
Yes, right. But if the league plays bad cop, I don't know that there is. So like, let's say it goes to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator sides with Mark and Alex and says, yes, you know what, that was good. But the league's like, upon further inspection of your funding, we don't like it. So we're not going to approve it.
Yeah.
It's Glenn's team again. So that's the one. That's the one question I have is, you can force Glenn's hand. You can ruin Glenn if you want to try. Go for it. But what happens if the last step is the Board of Governors says, sorry, guys, no go?
Yeah. No, and that's all. That's the thing. Like, we've spent the last 48, 72 hours. Glenn Taylor goes on his media blitz, and then Mark and Alex go on their media blitz. And there's a lot of ego and a lot of chest puffing. It's just billionaires versus billionaires. And at the end of the day, it's going to be the NBA and or lawyers that decide who owns this. And I want to just color some more of this here. I spent a couple hours yesterday afternoon and evening talking to multiple people who I would characterize them as just being very, very plugged in to this entire situation.
Okay.
And I just want to summarize my takeaways from those conversations here. First off, there's an acknowledgement across the board here that Mark and Alex are going to steamroll Glenn Taylor in the PR battle. Fans, rightfully so, do not like Glenn Taylor. I've been personally very vocal. You have been for 10, 15 years on these microphones, anti-Glenn Taylor, right? Glenn has been largely a terrible owner of a professional basketball franchise. And Mark and Alex know this. They're professionally weaponizing this. They have one of the top law firms in the country. I'm assuming they have PR help that is crafting this media wave, right? They are very, very interested in understanding the things that cut the deepest to side with the fans against Glenn Taylor. And it's smart. Like, this is their way of trying to get the fans and the public perception behind them and push back against the New York Post article and some of the things that have come out saying they don't have the money. David Sampson on the Dan Le Batard podcast coming out saying, hey, I dealt with A-Rod with the Marlins attempted purchase. At the end of the day, he didn't have the money, right? So yep. they're pushing back at that, and they're pushing back at Glenn Taylor. And it's a very high level professional PR blitz that Glenn Taylor will not be able to match at all whatsoever.
Yeah. And won't.
So that's kind of my. On the Glenn Taylor side, by the way, I'm told he understood that this was probably going to happen when he put that statement out a couple days ago that, like, A-Rod was, I mean, how many times in A-Rod's life and career has he been put into a corner and he comes out swinging, right?
Yeah. Yes. Which is part of what I don't trust. So A-Rod has shown that his PR is to huff and puff and attempt to blow the house down. But once the house is down, what happens?
And that's the question. Like, they're going to blow the house down. They're going to try to.
Right.
And are they then going to own the house?
Well, and to go back to what I said, they are sort of equating this to, well, we bought a business, and then at the last, you know, we, in fact, their example was, you know, you buy a house in 2021 at a set rate, right? And then you live in the house for a while, and the price goes up, and the person that owned it comes back and is like, hey, I want my money now. I want more money because of how much this house has gone up in value. Well, yeah, that's cool that you are right about that. That cannot be done. But what they didn't bring up was, what if there was a third party, which is the league? Like, they're operating on, we bought a business in good faith, and now this Putz is saying we can't have it. Okay, that's true in business.
Yeah.
But there's a third party here that ultimately controls this franchise.
And that's the second thing that I'd like to put out there here, which is just in my conversations yesterday, there's a very strong feeling that despite A-Rod and Lori coming out swinging in the media yesterday and shredding Glenn Taylor limb from limb in the court of public opinion, there's a very strong feeling among people in the know that the deal still won't go through, that Glenn Taylor will be the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves at the end of all of this. And so I think the best way I can characterize it is, it may feel great for Wolves fans who want Glenn Taylor out that, yes, A-Rod and Lori, they came punching back. They're swinging for the fences. Here we go. It is very much up in the air whether they will actually own the team at the end of this, despite all of the bluster and the, you know, the chest puffing. As someone put it to me yesterday, there's going to be a lot of rounds in this fight. So strap in. There might be more information that comes out at some point. There's more. So, like, what's on my end, just like putting my opinion hat back on, following this franchise for years, I am so sick of the Glenn Taylor circus. There's been multiple tours of this circus going back 20 plus years. The Joe Smith under the table part of the circus, the David Kahn part, right, over to the Tom Thibodeau blow up and everything. I mean, like, the incompetence, right, the broken relationships, the embarrassments, all of it. Yep. So in a perfect world, I would love A-Rod and Lori to own the team. But I feel like there's so many credible people and publications that have come out, from David Sampson with the Marlins over to the New York Post reports to some of the people, yeah, I have been able to talk to. Yep. There's enough questions and concerns about whether they can get this to the finish line. By the way, through the league, which you brought up, maybe most importantly, that I don't know that that's going to happen. Like, it'd be great if those guys had all the funds, all the money, all the liquid to run a team in the luxury tax once they actually purchased the majority stake. But there are, it is just because they came out swinging yesterday, unfortunately, it doesn't mean it's a done deal. So we're going to have to let this thing play out.
Absolutely. And, you know, the only thing that would have been different is if the league had approved this. If approval was done and then Glenn's like, I really don't want to, then he's screwed. Then he's gone. But just to be clear here, I'm not taking sides, because I think the whole thing, I think the Lori and especially A-Rod camp, I think Glenn Taylor, I think they have screwed this up beyond belief. The fact that they dropped some hints. So just first off on Alex, okay? I don't trust a word he says. I don't trust a word he says. He attempts to be, and he's pretty good at it, a PR professional. But everything he says, I see through the prism of his steroid act, which was like his playbook. I can pick the damn thing up right now, right? Start as a nice guy, but you're sort of awkward. The stories about him came out, you know, he was like, I think he showed up at what, Jeter's hotel room one night at like midnight in a full suit, knocking on the door to talk with some weird story. And then when things go bad, you get real defensive. You get mean, you drop the gloves, you punch. At some point, I fully expect conciliatory Alex to come back just like he did last time, because he's always adjusting to what he thinks might work next. I don't trust that. Lori, I don't know as well, but I did think that there was a very important part. So with Dane and Kyle, the gloves are off, right? Gloves are off. Everything. They're staying on. This is on the record. This is on the record. It's like, well, you're on camera, so yes, it's on the record. But did you notice when it came to the New York Post report, Lori glossed over it very quickly and said, we know who that is, but we don't want to say. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. If you're going full disclosure, who was it? J-Lo's camp. Like, and the post, that story was written by guys who are pretty plugged in and good. Like, the post, yes, the post looks for headlines, and politically, some people might love their bent, some people might hate it. But I thought it was very telling that Lori tried to gloss over that report so quickly, because that, to me, was the meat of the day. That was independent reporting that wasn't trying to rely on, well, I talked to Glenn, and then I talked to A-Rod, and then I talked to Lori. That was independent reporting that was very telling, I thought. And Lori tried to dismiss it immediately, and I think he was doing it on behalf of Alex, because my guess is that the leaks are coming from something in A-Rod's past. The other thing that I find to be just very infuriating about this entire thing, and it could only be the freaking Timberwolves, is that a league that is as big as this league, billion-dollar, I would call it the second most important league in this country right now to football, that they allowed a three-part gradual payment plan. Like, first of all, clean that crap up, right? Second of all, I don't care who suggested it. If Mark and Alex had come in and say, we want this thing and we can pay you gradually, but we can't write a check right now, which they're claiming they did not do. If I'm the league, I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be a majority partner, you're going to write a check. If I'm the league and Glenn says, I'd like to sell the team, and these guys are in my office right now and they got their checkbook out, then Phil, guess what? I'm saying it's got to be written now. Like, we're not going to do a three-part. Who on God's green earth dealing with Glenn Taylor, you know, the king of weird stuff happening the more time it's given, like Garnett, who thought that this was a advice? This is a, to me, this is a minor league deal.
In retrospect, yeah. But it's funny because, like, Mark and Alex kind of, even as they were crucifying Glenn yesterday, the one area where they kind of praised him was, you know what? We kind of liked it. We've learned a lot from Glenn the last couple years. We actually named it.
But I mean, think about how, like again, that's like Becky's pasta, right? Like, we got to eat at the, and it was unbelievable, you know? God. Like, this whole thing and everything involving Glenn is minor league. What are we doing here? Get somebody that can own this team. And my fear long term is this. My fear is, at Glenn's age, and what he's doing now, he's going to keep the team. He's going to, unfortunately, pass, because we all do. And at that point in time, the Taylor Family Corp is going to have a team they don't want. And I don't think they're going to have the patience to be like, if you're going to move, if you're going to talk about moving this team, we're not going to talk to you.
Yeah.
You're going to end up rolling the dice. And there's just so much there. To me, as a Wolves fan, if I care about the team, This isn't so much about, like, what's currently transpiring. This is far more of the succession of how this is going to work now scares me a lot.
You know what, though? Actually, if you get a chance, for you in the audience, Bill Simmons did the first 20 minutes of his podcast yesterday on this whole situation. And it kind of turned, it was like 5 minutes on Timberwolves and Glenn Taylor. But then it kind of turned into, where could all of this be headed? And he was talking more from the perspective of, yeah, it makes sense for Glenn to want to get out of this. If those guys either missed a date somewhere along the line, and this is another thing, I just want to throw this out too. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they may have either missed a date somewhere along the line or missed a parameter. Maybe it was supposed to be this level of payment, but it was only this. But you know what? Hey, we know what and Lori kind of alluded to this. We know what the contract says, but, you know, when you sit down at someone's house for dinner and you shake hands, you never go back and look at the contract, which to me was kind of an opening. It's almost like he was saying, maybe we missed a checkpoint in there somewhere, right. But here it is, like at the end of the the end of the road. But if you're Glenn and you're saying, you know what, I don't really like these guys anymore. I don't really trust these guys anymore. And I think this franchise could get $3 billion now. So, yeah, I'm gonna raise a flag and say that they didn't, in the end, hit the contractual checkpoints needed, right? So what Bill Simmons was saying is, you got Seattle and Las Vegas lurking as brand new expansion markets. And the NBA is going to have another massive media rights deal coming up. So, like, that's all going to kind of coincide around the same time, where here's a big chunk of new media money, and now we have sort of parameters for setting values for expansion franchises. And Bill was projecting that those franchises are going to be a combined $8 or $9 billion So it's going to cost like maybe $4 or $4.5 billion to buy the Las Vegas franchise.
Oh yeah,
and or the Seattle franchise. And that money gets split among the 30 owners. It does not go to the players. So you might wind up with like a $300 million check.
That's how hockey works too.
If yep. you're Glenn Taylor. So could you get an extra $1.5 billion on the value of your franchise and an extra $300 million check in the next couple of years if you just nuke this deal? So.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot.
God.
I don't think there's a good guy here. Just to be clear, I don't think there's like one side is right guy here.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I'm kind of with you now that I hope now that all of this came out and every billionaire said their piece, right? I hope it goes back to just basketball for a while. I don't know if I can take like a day-to-day soap opera for now. Let's reconvene after the season's over and see where this is at.
What's tomorrow night like? Bulls, 6 o'clock.
If Glenn shows up, people are going to boo him.
Glenn always shows up.
People are going to boo him. He's going to need security over there. I think it's going to be bad.
I expect Glenn being Glenn. He comes off as a sort of country Mankato bumpkin, but he's clearly a shark, and he is clearly like Glenn's sweaters don't belie the fact that below that sweater, there's a heart of stone. There's a cold. There's a Scrooge-like heart. I think he shows up.
He will nuke relationships. He will, whether it's a Kevin McHale or a Kevin Garnett or these guys, like he is not afraid. He's kind of a sociopath in that way. I feel like he just doesn't, he's not a culture builder or a relationship builder from, well, at least as a basketball.
You know, what's funny though. Like this is all the reason why he has been such a bad owner, because he's a good businessman. Like as far as businesses grow, like you think about it, ideally you grow cultures, right? And stuff, but the dude's a shark. So he's gone into businesses, and Carl Pohlad did the same thing. You know, you go into businesses and you blow them sky high. You revamp them. People hate you, but it's a business. No one really knows about it. Right.
But you can't run sports teams that way.
I agree completely. But that's what I'm saying is he has tried to run like the Garnett thing. If Garnett was a CEO at his paper company. Yeah. All right. And he'd been a great employee and he was somewhat volatile. Let's be frank about that. But, you know, but he had been one of Glenn's key employees and Glenn alienated him. And now they don't talk. No one really gives a damn. So I'm with you. That's the thing. But we are seeing a play-by-play of why this guy, when it comes to owning a sports team, it has been so ineffective.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't understand that this is not one of your businesses, dude. Like this is and again, it goes up to the very top. These teams aren't controlled. These teams are controlled by the league.
Well, a couple things on this. All right. It's too bad that all these dudes, all these rich dudes, old grandpa Glenn Taylor down to new money Mark Lowry and fresh-faced Alex Rodriguez, it was kind of the perfect arrangement for 2 years. And that Glenn has more financial – Glenn probably has more money and more financial flexibility than either one of A-Rod or Lowry. I mean, a lot of – if you believe the reporting,
right?
A lot of Lowry's net worth is tied up in startups. Right. So he doesn't just have like checks that he can write that Glenn Taylor has. And so in the last 2 years, you've had the grandpa money guy in Glenn Taylor, but you've had the fresh, enthusiastic, culture building, new age technology guy,
players love
former
it.
Athlete, right? Connecting with the players.
Yep.
Okay. So Glenn's going to write the checks and sit there in his little sweaters courtside. But these new guys are the minority owners coming in. They're hiring Tim Connolly. They're building connections with Anthony Edwards. They're building a vibe. They're building a culture. Yeah. It's kind of perfect the way that it is, right? Like if these guys were to
sitcom. How is the old owner going to get along with the two new kids who are, well, and as A-Rod said like 8 times, we're like juniors in high school. And now we're going to senior year.
Senior
you're stopping
prom.
Us from going to senior year. We can't.
Dude, Dane Moore with the line of the podcast. We said Glenn's getting senioritis. He doesn't want to leave.
Yes.
He doesn't want to. I just like if it could stay this way, which it can't now, obviously, because the relationships are nuked sky high. But you got these guys in. They're basically the Magic Johnson, right? Magic Johnson's never the majority owner, but he comes in and he sits in the suites and he's hey, Magic Johnson's a part
he's
owner.
He's front facing, but. Yeah. But if you're to believe what those two guys talked about, and this part I actually do buy, where it gets hanky, at least from a perception standpoint, is when somebody told them, hey, back off for a while now. Glenn wants to be the front facing. And again, I totally buy that. I totally buy that Glenn, that as things got good, Glenn was like, yeah, this is great. And Glenn would somehow in a warped world think that he had a lot to do with this when he didn't even know who the GM was. So
yeah.
So that's this whole problem, I think, is like you've got all of these signals crossed, wires crossed, and that's the issue with a 2.5 year, you know, ramp up.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, my last couple things on this are just, I have a pretty healthy skepticism of whether A-Rod and Laurie have the right group and the finances and the structure to pass through all of the legal hurdles they're going to have to here. I would just, if you're a Wolves fan, just, I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion just
enjoy
because
the season,
they are pounding the table. I don't know that it's, but at the same time, I want Glenn Taylor to feel terrible about what he has done here.
Is he capable?
Not just from the press release, but like the whole thing, 20 years. I want Glenn to show up to that game on Sunday. I want him to get booed, and I want him to understand how much fans can't stand him. At the same time, he has also potentially saved the franchise from being moved a couple of times, but he is one of the worst owners in the history of the NBA.
Is he capable?
Not because he's a terrible guy, but he's a terrible owner.
Yeah.
Is he capable of...
feeling that? Like, this is a guy who has alienated KG to the point where KG hates his guts. And you know, say what you will about Kevin, he is the best player in franchise history. Mm-hmm. And until Ant, it wasn't particularly close. Like, do you think that Glenn is capable of processing the feelings that you want him to process?
I don't know. But just to the point about, like, the 2.5 year journey here, Glenn is framing it up as, like, these guys, at the end of the day, these guys, this and that. Okay, well, let's say that that's true. Let's say Glenn is right here. And let's say that these guys didn't have the right structure, didn't hit the deadlines, all that they were full of crap, right? And they are disputing that. But let's say Glenn's right. Well, you know what, dude? At the end of the day, once again, you picked the wrong horse.
Right.
Two and a half years ago.
100%. Amen.
Right? Everything is self-inflicted with this guy and this franchise for freaking decades. So yeah, maybe you're right, but if you want to go back, you picked the wrong horses once again.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. And you're basically now saying that. You know, he's a billionaire and he can definitely afford this, but just the fact that he is such a small timer in the world of pro sports too. Like this is frighteningly getting close to how the whole North Stars thing felt. Lack of a building, which, by the way, is a huge deal. You know, and then Glenn tells Patrick, oh, well, Target Center is good for a few more years. It needs some improvement.
Because he's small time.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not good enough for a few more years. Somebody's got to get working. I don't care how you finance it.
I do believe the Tim Connolly thing that you threw out there. Why would a guy like that want to work here? Dude, get out of here. If that's the small time mind that you have, then get out of here.
But okay, so enjoy the rest of the season, and hopefully there's a long playoff run. But as I was texting with you and Dugues a couple of nights ago, the Connolly thing scares me. What does his contract say? Because if his guys are out entirely, he's coming off a year where, I mean, he's going to be seen as a genius. And if Glenn walks in and says, oh, okay, Tim, you've done a great job, I do like you, what's to stop Tim from saying, you know what? My contract says that if that sale didn't go through, I'm gone.
Tim would not be the architect of this front office and this organization if it wasn't for Alex and Mark.
100%.
And Alex and Mark might not have the structure to get the team at the end of the day. Like there's room for a lot of truths in here.
But you know? Like you said, the 2.5 year ramp up, which in itself is ridiculous, it has worked out really well. Because it proved that Glenn can't run the team. Like, we've talked about that for a long time. That's not breaking news. But now you got a 2.5 year, it's a wonderful life type of scenario where Glenn got replaced, basically. Mm-hmm. One, he decided he didn't like that, which is so ticky-tack. But the second one is, you think about Mark and Alex might be great guys. They might be the worst guys on the face of the earth. But as far as what they were doing with this team, they did a lot right. You can't debate it.
Yep. So, wow. I think that's the end of this episode here, this particular part of the saga. But, man, it's I guess one final thing. You said it like maybe 20 minutes ago that you're not going to pick sides. And that's kind of where I'm at here. I have major issues with Glenn going back years and years. I love the work that A-Rod and Lurie have done so far with this organization, but I have heard from enough people and have enough questions about, like, why is the deal not done? It's been 2 years. Why is the deal not done? And until those questions are answered, I feel like I'm just going to be sitting here waiting for lawyers and the NBA to pull back the curtain even more and hope that we can have some fun basketball games over the next couple months.
It won't be dull, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So, all right, he's Judd. He's the sports dad. I'm Phil. We'll get Kyle back in the mix here in a couple of days. This is a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast, Flagrant Howls.